Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Flannel Panel, and we're about to do our National Public Radio audio quiz with Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Jeck. Always a fun part of the program. I almost gave out the number. I get in the habit of just giving out the number at the top of the hour, and it's hard to break it.
You can give the number out, but we won't answer the phone.
We're not going to answer it. No. there's no one there to answer. I just looked over at the station. There's nobody there. Ava Vlardingerbrook.
Well, also when they called. It's not going to be right now because this is pre-recorded.
Yeah. Ava Vlardingerbrook. Did I say it right? I messed up that name so bad last hour, and Darren was familiar with her because a lot of those people he is seeing about getting them to be guests on our show.
Fantastic.
Why do they have really hard names up there in the above the Arctic Circle? All people that live above the Arctic Circle, matter where you go, they have really hard names.
Is that above the Arctic Circle?
Oh, she's Dutch? Oh, yeah. Is it above? Yeah, that's a geography question that I sadly don't know the answer to. Where is Dutch? Where's Dutch land? Where's Dutch? Duchy. What's
Great
it called?
Okay.
All right. It's time for that. Now that I have shown my shining intellect, it is time for us to go to National Public Radio.
Aren't we going to Amsterdam on our cruise?
Is that
in Dutch land? Is Amsterdam in Dutch land?
Is Amsterdam in
Where's Amsterdam?
It's like in
Holland.
It's down low. It sounds somewhere
Sweden,
low.
Sweden, Norway, Scandinavia.
It's the capital of the Netherlands.
It's the capital of Netherlands.
I was 90% sure, but I had to double check because I get the Netherlands and Denmark confused.
Here's
which is
my
Danish and Dutch.
Do the Spanish still run the Netherlands?
I don't think the Spanish still run Spain. I think they're having some trouble with that. So we'll see. I don't know. Amsterdam is the capital of the netherworld, you said? Is that what you said? I didn't hear.
Something like that. Low countries, netherworld.
Okay. National Public Radio. What can one say about National Public Radio?
On the air?
What can one say about them that they haven't said about themselves? National Public Radio here in the United States, for our international listeners, I always feel like I need to kind of explain National Public Radio. And I've come up with this. It's like the BBC without the commitment or the education. I don't know.
Or the cool accents.
I don't know.
They have their own, not accent, but their own cadence at least.
Yeah, it's the uptalk. It's the Central Valley uptalk.
It's the it's like Americans spend millions of dollars to have smug people tell them why America's bad. Is that a good description of National Public Radio?
It seems accurate. Anymore, I mean, and look, people of a certain age may remember when NPR was a
good,
really great source of
and
information
fun
because
to listen
it
to, yeah.
Because of its model where it's not profit driven, it could explore things from kind of unpopular lenses. And I think it's fair to say it's been so ideologically captured. It was always left wing. But it was at least intellectually curious in the past.
There's
and I don't
one,
think
yeah, left wing
is.
There's nothing wrong with left wing.
There's tons of things wrong. With
no,
it.
I'm not inherently, because there has to be a left wing and a right wing.
Right.
But if you do it with intelligence and share, they looked into so many things that were interesting. They would and they were willing to do long form reporting, which was always exciting. Yeah. And now it's I don't know. It's
there is one guy. If you're young and you do want to have a sense of just a sense, not a complete sense, but a sense of what NPR was like when it was more intelligent in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. Scott Simon on Saturdays.
He still does it?
He does the morning program on Saturdays, whatever that's called, morning edition. Weekend edition.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
And he is of that.
He's more like that.
He must be in his eight. I don't know.
They were always kind of Ivy League-y. They had
this
kind
he's
of.
He's 73. Okay. His wiki right here. Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with being Ivy League-y. Now you're going to say, yes, there is. Yeah, that's an ontological category.
Lots of things. Lots of things.
All right. The National Public Radio All Things Considered program did a story on a deep divide among religious people in the United States. So here's where the quiz begins. What divide are they concerned about? This is, I'm going to give you three options. What divide is National Public Radio reporting on among religious people in the United States? A, whether we should transition transgender teens? B, how do we respond to the Trump administration? Or C, what is the proper care for migrants? Once again, it's an ABC question. I didn't want to make this one too easy. What dividing
all of the above?
Dividing Christians did National Public Radio decide they needed to report on whether we should transition transgender teens, how to respond to the Trump administration, or what's the proper way to care for migrants?
It's A.
I think it's A.
Well, let's have clip one, please.
Last month, Kansas became the 26th state to ban or otherwise limit gender-affirming medical care for teens, according to KFF. Those bans are supported by some of the biggest religious groups in the U.S., including the Catholic Church and the Southern Baptist Convention. But as Rose Conlin of member station KMUW reports, not all faith leaders agree.
Well, not all faith leaders agree is not news, okay? I don't know why we're reporting that. But
I was so distracted by the fact that her voice seemed to be coming exclusively through her nose.
Right. Well, this is what I like. I did not want to make this easy on you guys, but I wanted to test my theory, which is every story on NPR is about transgenderism now.
Because if you can get someone who's with you on transgenderism, all like B and C go with A.
Right. Yeah, right, right.
Like, they're not A is the furthest left. Yes. Saying like Donald Trump says things that are bad is not a particularly controversial political stance. Saying we should be kind to migrants, not a particularly controversial stance. Saying we should transition minors, that's an 80-20 where you're on the wrong side, just in terms of, they're staking themselves out at the political fringe under the guise of journalism. But I mean, it's patently, transparently, activism. Because
this is activism, right?
Let's see equally right-wing fringe view, and let's mainstream that. They would say, no, we don't want to platform that. So they're intentionally platforming, to use the obnoxious parlance of the day, these what are honestly extreme views as measured by not just American politics, but any, like, take European politics. Look at the United Kingdom. Look at the Cass Report. Look at how much like British people are standing up against mutilating children.
Well, it turns out that most people have noticed that there's a difference between boys and girls. And this has happened. It's amazing. But even before modern science, you'll find records in the historical record, going back all the way to cave people, that people notice there's a difference between boys and girls.
Can I say something that it needs to be very much underscored about what Joe said? This has been part of the playbook for more than a century. It's to stake out. It isn't to say what, you know, how can we come to terms, or here I am, here are you, where do we have some common ground? It is, no, in fact, to stake out the most extreme position, and in so doing, slowly and continuously and steadily move the conversation in that direction.
Right.
And it was Herbert Marcuse who proposed this, and others like him, and they've been doing it ever since. The reason I take a minute to repeat what Joe said here is because it shows how, in many cases, it's just not fruitful to attempt to have conversations with these people, because they're not, in fact, interested in where are we going to find some common ground. But
that's right.
We are so far out here, and we're going to continue to, you know.
Because if we can get you to agree to this,
yeah,
then you're in on all the rest of it,
yeah,
on all the other things that we want. Yeah, and that is the definition of activism. That is not journalism. All right, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to do a cliffhanger question. I'm going to give you – I have another multiple-choice question for you about this urgent and important report from National Public Radio on how not all religious people agree on everything. And the hero of this story about transgenderism is a rabbi who draws on the Torah to help people understand what they owe God, B, a Baptist minister opposed to altering the bodies of teenagers, or C, a United Methodist minister who has covered his walls in the office with pride flags and is the dad of a gender-fluid teenager. Who is the hero? Don't tell me your answers, gentlemen.
I like that you went to an easier one after Don't the harder one.
Don't tell me, gentlemen, is it the rabbi, is it the Baptist minister, or is it the United Methodist minister? We'll find out right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily Mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Watch your favorite EWTN show, series, or special, or listen to your favorite EWTN radio program at any time, day or night. EWTN On Demand brings all your favorites instantly. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, National Public Radio, on their All Things Considered program, did a story about the divide religious people are facing about whether or not we should transition transgender teenagers. It's hard for me to even put the words together sometimes. Who is the hero of their story? A rabbi who draws on the Torah to help people understand what they owe God? A Baptist minister opposed to altering the bodies of teenagers? Or a United Methodist minister who has covered the walls of his office with pride flags and is the dad of a gender-fluid teenager? Gentlemen, which of these figures is the hero of NPR's story?
The Methodist minister.
Yes, I think pretty clearly.
Well, prepare to be shocked, sure. Gentlemen. Play clip six, please.
Back at Grace United Methodist Church, McKenzie's office is decorated with rainbow flags. Like many Americans, his perspective on gender identity is shaped by his personal relationships. In his case, being the dad of a gender-fluid teenager.
This is what I would refer to as manipulation, again and again and again. And I'll tell you something, just to fast forward, the story ends from the perspective of the gender-fluid teenager, which is an NPR trick. First of all, because, we're not going to attack that teenager. We're not going to – that's an unimpeachable witness. Like, you can't – if you do attack a teenager, you're a jerk. So obviously we're not going to do that. But I will point out that that's manipulative. What you're doing is humanizing one side of the story so that you can dehumanize the other side of the story. Anybody who is opposed to this poor teenager is the jerk of the story.
Yeah. I want to just point out, on NPR's own website, they have an article. It's an opinion piece by Elizabeth Jensen, the NPR public editor, called Who Gets the Last Word? Recognizing that whoever you give the last word to, this is a power, because it's kind of the thing
it's a
that
power
you're,
move.
You're leaving people with, right? Like,
yeah.
So when you say, if you want to know somebody's bias, you should often just look and see,
who did they give the last word to?
Yep. And then also, how sympathetic or unsympathetic, how smart or how foolish are the people chosen to represent the two sides? Now, I haven't heard this piece. I don't even know if they bothered giving a second side or if they just vaguely said, like, Catholic Church, bad, and then just said, look at all these really sympathetic figures on definitely not our side. We're just reporting the news.
They did report the Catholic position. They reported it, and I'll have to paraphrase, but it's basically the Vatican opposes gender-affirming care. I think that's almost word for word, so that you're stuck with this. That's all they said about it. But they had a very articulate guy from the Baptist, whatever the political, advocacy arm of the Baptist church is in Kansas. And he did a good job. He said, look, love is his basic point was it's not love to allow people to live in untruth and to
right.
And we're not loving people by letting them encourage teenagers to live in untruth that will, you know, alter their bodies forever.
Good on him.
And he did a good job. I thought he did a good job. Not, I mean, it's, so it was like all that's in the middle, and then we go back to what the story's really about, which is
right.
If you disagree with NPR, you hate this teenager who lives in Kansas.
Yeah, it's a nice left-wing sandwich. It's
right.
We're going to start with here are the good guys, and then you got to have a little bit of conflict in Act 2. So here are the bad guys who want to oppose the brilliance of what we believe in. And then you end with the sympathetic story about the protagonists.
Yeah.
I'm reminded here, even the use of like Vatican in the kind of pejorative way that it comes up in these stories, of this is a bit of a deep cut, but the 1949 book American Freedom and Catholic Power by the left-wing journalist from The Nation.
That's not
Paul
that's not,
Blanchard.
That is not kind of a deep cut. Like, really, did you just say the 1949 book and then it's just kind of a deep cut? Yeah, that's almost
Paul
a century
Blanchard
old.
Was this beloved like leftist, kind of liberal, but I think even more than liberal, just like left-wing. But he was obsessed with the idea that Catholicism, that America had a Catholic problem because of this alien control by the Vatican, that it was un-American to be Catholic. Mm-hmm. And we often associate that with like fringe elements on the Protestant right. But the atheistic left has long had a version of this as well. And so I think you should recognize when they tee up what is frankly often xenophobia, you can call that out as like, okay, don't do that. That's gross.
Yeah. All right. So and this next one is not a multiple choice question. All right. All you do is finish the sentence. The reporter is going to start a sentence and I am going to ask you to finish the sentence. So it's a little more open ended. Let's have clip 2. Here's the reporter. And you're only going to get the sentence up to a certain point. It'll stop. And I want you to say what are the words that come after that.
McKinsey is a lifelong Republican and was raised in a church that taught homosexuality and gender diversity are counter to Christian teachings. But McKinsey says...
No. We cut that too early. Oh, we cut that too early. Okay, maybe we didn't cut it too early. I was thinking of the wrong clip. So McKinsey says he came to believe something. So that's I think we did want a few more words there. So it ends with, so this guy was a Republican and he was raised in a church that says homosexual acts are wrong. Well, she didn't say that. She didn't. That's not how she said it. But
gender diversity. You can't even have two genders in whatever church McKinsey's from.
I know, what a
crazy
McKinsey church.
Has this ambiguous name.
So he came to believe is what was where that was supposed to end. All right. So what did he come to believe?
That Jesus loves all people.
That God loves everybody, something like that. That God loves him as he is.
Okay, so that would mean, if that's the answer, that would mean that all these Christians who believe that marriage is between a man and a woman,
they don't love everyone.
Or don't believe in gender fluidity or the transgender movement, their belief, by contrast, is that Jesus doesn't love everybody. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That would be ridiculous. It'd be hard to believe anyone would be so manipulative as to do that.
Because that would be really manipulative if what you're saying is, I used to think Christian things, but then I came to believe that Jesus loves all people. Is that what you guys are saying?
Yes.
That's how low you think this reporter is going? How did the reporter finish the sentence, Darren?
But McKinsey says he came to believe that all humans are made in the image of God, a belief that has become personal for him.
To believe.
So he came to have
came
a personal
belief.
He came. He used to be a Christian or whatever. I mean, I'm obviously paraphrasing in a negative way, but he used to be one of those Christians that believes in marriage and stuff. But then he came to believe that God cares
God
about
is
all
love.
People.
Yeah. So I'm reminded here, the great irony of this is one of the strongest points we have in resisting the kind of transgender ideology is that you already are made in the image of God. You don't have to mutilate your body. I mean, so Donald
Beautiful
Trump, and
Joe.
Not exactly State of the Union, whatever his address to Congress is called. I've got the text in front of me. I just pulled it up. He says, shortly after taking office, I signed an executive order banning public schools from indoctrinating our children with transgender ideology. I also signed an order to cut off all taxpayer funding to any institution that engages in the sexual mutilation of our youth. And now I want Congress to pass a bill permanently banning and criminalizing sex changes on children and forever ending the lie that any child is trapped in the wrong body. This is a big lie. And our message to every child in America is that you are perfect, exactly the way God made you. That's, I mean, obviously, we don't want to say that in a way that denies original sin or any of this stuff.
Well, you're not perfect, but you're you're awful good.
You don't
good.
Need surgery.
Who's,
need
the, who's the author of this?
That was Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
That was Donald Trump, yeah. Who that? Which means and, we don't know who the author is. It is because presidents
read. Used to be Joshua Charles, right?
The vice president. No, he wrote for the vice president.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
You know, but go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say that's the great perversity. There's such this incredible game of doublespeak that gender affirming care is the stuff that mutilates you at the gendered level, right. And to believe that you're made in the image of God means you have to deface the image of God as much as you can on your body, like that. That is so abhorrently false. Like our message is not if you are confused about your gender, God doesn't love you or you're not made properly. Our message is even in the midst of your confusion, God made you beautiful as a man or a woman. And he chose that, not you. And that his design for you is better than whatever psychological state you find yourself in.
I think we can encourage our listeners, Cy and Joe, who find themselves frustrated by this, to make a practice of listening to how the words specifically are being manipulated to mean either to set up this opposition or to mean something
that they don't mean.
What they are. Yeah.
Right.
So choice is a great example, right? Yeah, which means killing. But
that's a very good point.
Another one.
States' rights. No, I'm just kidding.
Another one that
Joe.
I'd actually like to come back to Joe's utterly bizarro analogy from the earlier segment, but or simile. But
I didn't mean to derail you.
It's okay. Another word to be alert to is safe. So we hear about safe spaces all the time. In the National Catholic Reporter, which follows these methods of journalism the same way that National Public Radio does, there was an article about a transgender hermit who was going to come and speak at a Catholic church, but then someone in authority stopped this, thanks be to God. But the poster for the ad advertising the event said, this is going to be a safe space, right? So what that automatically sets up is that anyone who's opposed to this confused man,
it's not going to be a safe space for them.
Or requires or desires for the people to come to it not to be safe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is nuts. Right. Yeah.
It's the idea that speech is violence and violence is speech.
Yeah. That's a good – someone should assemble like a top 10 list of words that are currently
– top 50.
Currently being used. You know, we should monitor – like these are the words that are being used to basically tell you you're not allowed to talk about this.
Well, they mean the opposite of what they mean. Here's one. Border. Well, until very recently, border didn't mean what it should mean. You know.
Wait, what did it mean?
Well,
someone that boards at your house?
No, border that between two countries.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
It meant sieve or something, but it didn't really mean border.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, but words change over time. That's fine. But the question is there an intentional attempt to use this word like safety or safe
right.
space?
Yes, right.
To
or choice.
Yeah, to basically to label
love,
people.
Love.
Yeah. So this guy, this is a weird thing. Like this is like a cudgel that's used against Christians. Like, well, Jesus taught love.
Right.
And when I found that out, I realized that all the other things Jesus taught are baloney. Well, that's not how that works. Jesus is love. Jesus not just teach it. He is love incarnate. He is love come among us as a man. So listen to him. Like that's really, really important that you listen to him.
This is why the work of our colleague, especially, and I'm not saying the other apologists don't do this, but our colleague and friend Carla Broussard, who is philosophically trained and insists on using words that we are going to agree what the definition of those words are. And he insists on, you know, these are the categories and let's agree what they mean. Because if we can't first agree on those things. So one thing that you very rarely hear the people at National Public Radio talk about, as Joe has observed already, is what's true. And by the way, what does that mean, right? Can we agree what truth means? And if we agree that there's something called truth, then we have to agree that there's something called not truths. But that's a word that you'll hear love a lot, but you really won't hear truth a lot.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because love is so malleable a word. Yeah,
or what does love mean? And as Carla would tell you, and Joe or anybody who's listened to Catholic Answers Live can say, it's
never
desire.
Having to say no. Okay, sorry. I guess I didn't know the answer.
No, it means the good feelings about everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's desiring the good of the other. And then, of course, good is going to require some definition there as well.
Flannery O'Connor, in her letter to Dr. Spivey, I believe, talks about, she throws out the thesis that Catholics are more fascinated by truth and Protestants by goodness. And if you take that principle seriously, and she argues as a result, Catholics love Protestants more than they love atheists, but they understand atheists better than they understand Protestants. Mm-hmm. Because an atheist who says, I don't think this stuff is true, okay, we're having the same conversation. A person who says, well, doesn't matter what the doctrine is because we're all just trying our best. That's a different framework.
Yeah.
There's more of that thought, but I'll have to save it for the other half.
I got another quiz question coming up. National Public Radio, endless, wonderful information about religion in America. And when they cover it, we try to cover them. We'll do more of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I didn't know we were going to get a little bit of groovy music today. But what a day we're having. What a great day we're having. And enjoying listening to National Public Radio cover American religion. It's always fascinating. Last time it was a book about how Catholics had a chance to become good secularists in the 60s, but they blew it and they ended up stuck in that backwards Catholic Church. This time it's about how there's a divide, a quote unquote divide among religious people in the United States over transitioning teenagers. If I may, Cy,
I think you're sleeping on the best observation or insight from the last guy. which was that he discovered that Jesus didn't speak Latin to the disciples.
That was...
I think we all came away edified, knowing that our tax dollars were going to spread such important information.
Well, that's why it's that high-quality reporting that we get from National Public Radio that makes us come back time and time again when they report on religion.
But I assumed he spoke English. Why else is the Bible in English?
I know. You see, Joe, that's what you're the deep thinker of the group. You really are the deep thinker of the group. But I don't know how much of a divide there is. Among religious people, that's different than the divide in the whole society. I mean, I think a very large percentage of people think you should leave kids alone. You shouldn't be injecting them with things or. A very large number of people know that there's a problem with histrionic parents and school counselors who are whipping this up. Let's just admit the reality of what's going on. Like the people who are advocating for, you know, gender diversity and helping these children, they're not helping these children. They're leading these children down this path in many, many cases. And there's also this contagion going on where young people are lost and confused, and they're like, oh, I think the reason for it is I'm transgender. If next week you come up with a different thing, they're going to have a different thing. This is a media-created problem, as many problems. And I actually don't blame the media for media-created problems. The media is not at fault for them. These are just things that come over the human species. We're social creatures, and we take social cues, and we get social contagions. And the media is the means by which those social contagions are transmitted these days. But
also sometimes created and propagated. A fair number of these things, they're not just reported.
Fair enough.
They are... expanding it, they're trying to turn it into a story.
Right. That's certainly the case. But, you know, it's like the reporting that says, you know, the people from the World War II generation, this percentage of them admitted to being gay, and then people from the millennials and Gen Zs, it's this percentage. Well, you look at that and you go, that's a meaningless thing. This has nothing to do with reality. This has to do with how those words, the meaning of them changed over time, what you're encouraging people to think, the what they're seeing on television. This has nothing to do with the nature of human beings or anything. So anyways, it's always fun to find out what NPR is reporting on because, frankly, I mean, there's a lot of unhinged media in the United States, but they're always being led by NPR. National Public Radio is always, they're thinking, oh, it's the looniest idea. Let's get out ahead of that one. All right. I think that's what they say in their editorial meetings. So one last clip for our quiz on their reporting on the. Oh, I did want to ask you this. Like you can always say there's a divide. Like there's a divide in the Republican Party over, you know, just say X. There is, because the Republican Party is huge. There's always going to be a divide. There's a divide in the, you know, in Indian society about X. Yes, there is. So the question is the divide worth reporting on? And it seems to me religious people are basically the Venn diagram of religious Americans and all Americans is about 80%. So of course there's a division. It doesn't seem to me that that's an interesting reportable fact.
The other thing about the word division is sort of contained in it. It means that the sides are kind of about the same size.
Yeah.
And now I was actually digging into the etymology, and that's not actually in there. But, you know, when we divide something, we think about it in two or something like that. We cut a little piece of it off.
Yeah.
Right. So
that's a good point.
I think this divide, Joe said 80-20. What is it, 99-1? Who really thinks it's a good idea to mutilate a teenager's genitals?
No, it's insanely low. And even the people who do think it, as soon as the zeitgeist changes, they're not going to think it anymore. It's a temporary, it's a passing fever that we're having. And NPR is all, if the country catches a fever, NPR spikes it to 140. I mean, they catch the fever hard. I think that they are thought leaders, but what they are is people, they're a sign of whatever is happening. They just take it to the extreme. They go to the absolute loony extreme with it.
All right, and they do it with a straight face.
And they do it with a kind of derision of everybody else.
Who thinks it's a good idea that a male swimmer should share the locker room with the rest of his Ivy League swim team?
No.
Well, I've got a worse one for you. We were talking before the break about the Orwellian kind of use of language to mean the opposite of what it actually means. 3 days ago, as of this pre-recording, the headline says this. It's a Chicago source. Federal complaints lodged against Chicago, Deerfield, for accommodating trans students.
Yeah, that's not what happened.
Nope. They forced young girls to change in front of a biological boy.
Right. That's what we used to call that evil, if you did something like that.
Right. I mean, there were movies about that. And,
yeah.
You know, like this is child abuse. And so calling that accommodation of the boy by forcing girls to change, and that's insane. So I couldn't find, at least a kind of a moment's notice, numbers on like what percentage of people are against surgical transitioning for minors. Because a lot of times, I think when these questions get asked, there's so many euphemistic terms that people don't necessarily even know what it is they're saying yes or no to. You know, if someone says, are you affirming gender-affirming care? I'm like, well, yeah, definitely. It just turns out we mean opposite things by that.
Yeah, we just don't. Right. It's like the whole saying a transgender girl. A transgender girl is a boy. Like but you're not even permitted to have the discussion with me unless you'll use the language I mandate that you use. You're a bigot if you go, well, I don't know what a transgender girl is.
Right.
Well,
it's this level of Orwellian language. You know, unless you're really deeply in this stuff, which probably says your views already, then trans man, trans woman. Most people have to stop and say, I don't know if you mean a man thinking he's a woman or a woman thinking she's a man. So people are confused by this stuff and people seize upon this. But nevertheless, there were two things that I saw from this 2022 Pew Research study that suggests that this is not going the way the kind of radical activists want it to go. In terms of those polled who say that being a man or woman is determined by sex assigned at birth. Assigned at birth is an insane way of describing sex. First of all, it's biological, and it's not assigned, and it's not at birth. You can do a gender. Literally, there's stuff now where you can just do a blood draw on a pregnant woman and find out if there's male DNA in her body to know if she's pregnant with a boy or not.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Nobody's assigning. Nobody's
all of
saying,
that is just
well,
fake. It's all a made-up world. It's a pretend yes. world. Assigned what at birth? No, Edgar's wife said the funniest thing one day. I said, are you going to find out at the when you get the ultrasound if it's a boy or girl? She goes, we're going to find out when he tells us what the gender of the child is. I thought that was hilarious because.
Yeah, one of my sisters asked when my wife was pregnant, when are you going to find out gender? And I said, college.
Yeah. You
know, but people get that it's a joke.
But they actually believe this fantasy. They actually
I don't think as many people believe it as say,
yeah,
you know, because
right.
as soon as you're pregnant, even your very left-wing, very liberal, very woke, whatever, you know, say all the right things on trans stuff that's politically correct, they'll ask you the same question if you're going to find out gender. They know. But we see this in the data. So in 2017, Americans were split 54 to 44 on whether sex was assigned at birth or whether being a man or woman was tied to your sex or whether it could be different from your sex. By 2022, after years of very aggressive over-the-top activism, they went from being a 44 to 54 minority to being a 38 to 60. They've been losing ground the more they talk about this.
Right.
Because they're talking just insane nonsense. That's the first data point.
Right.
Second
like,
one.
Like, talk more. I wish they would talk
yeah,
more
exactly.
because they're making our argument for us. The more they talk,
I mean,
the more you go,
very
that's
much like
not
what
right.
you said about Protestantism in the last hour. Yeah, if you want to have this debate now that the internet exists, you'll find pretty quickly that these accusations aren't true and people can find out the truth. Same thing here. Well, the second data point here is when polled about whether parents should be investigated for child abuse, if, in the words of Pew, if they help someone younger than 18 get medical care for a gender transition, the numbers there, only 36%, I think it was, were like firmly convinced that they shouldn't be investigated for child abuse.
Yeah.
So
what's,
you have those kind of, 36% opposed, I believe it was. Yep. So a third of people think you shouldn't be investigated for child abuse. That means that two-thirds of people at the very least aren't opposed to the idea that you might be doing something horribly illegal and criminal to your child. I don't think you're winning that issue, NPR.
Can I tell you just one consequence of this that I am very sensitive to? We've had people on the show to talk about this, and that is that parents with severely disabled autistic children or children who have severe mental illness are afraid to take their children to hospitals because their children are being told, well, your problem is that you're transgender. So this has very, very real consequences for the people who are suffering the worst kind of suffering you can suffer. Children with psychiatric disorders are not being treated because parents no longer trust psychiatrists and psychiatric hospitals. And I'm not making this, you look on the internet, there are scores and scores of people who have publicly come out and said, I can't send my kid back to the hospital because the last time I sent my kid to the hospital, they were told they're a girl and they came home thinking they're a girl. Look, if you're creating a situation where children can't be treated for psychiatric disorders, I mean, this is like hell that this child is living in. You're not a good person. You're a bad person. Stop doing that.
I think of the millstone.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
Yes, indeed.
Right. All right. Let's take a break. We'll finish the quiz right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I told him about the woman who came to me and said her two children hadn't spoken to each other for 2 years. Their grandma died and she was very wealthy. She left half to each one. She said they're arguing over a commode. She said it's inlaid. Can you imagine being in hell and somebody saying to you, what are you here for?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, Joe Heschmeyer, our guest, Chris Check, our guest. I got to give you guys the last quiz question from the NPR reporter. All right, so NPR did a report on the divide. It's a completely made up manipulative report. Let's just say it like it is about the divide among religious people on whether or not we should transition teenagers. So here's the last question. So it's the same as before. You guys have to finish the sentence. So the NPR reporter is going to start a sentence about this transgender-affirming Methodist minister who's the hero of our story here. And I want you to fill in the blank of the end of the sentence. And I hope I gave you the right timestamps on this one, Darren. I apologize for the last one. All right, go ahead is it clip number four? Yeah, clip number four.
In the small Kansas town of Winfield, worshipers gather for Sunday service at Grace United Methodist Church. Pastor Charles McKenzie begins his sermon by introducing himself and his...
Introducing himself and
pronouns.
His...
Pronouns.
What do you say?
Yes, pronouns. By the way, do they really have that organ music?
I was thinking the same thing.
That's something.
Sounds like NPR downloaded
that. They edited that in.
Or they had to call somebody. Could you get the organist to come in? Well, we don't really play the organ. Yeah, just find an organist, bring him in. Like whole thing seems manufactured.
Yeah.
I think distortions with organs is kind of the whole theme of the piece.
So you think that the hero. Wait. Joe, that was finally a good pun, and I almost just went right past it. Please say that again, Joe.
Shane, distorted organs is kind of the whole piece. That's yes, all that they're advocating for here.
All right. So you both think that he introduces himself and his pronouns?
Or his son. His gender fluid son.
I think it's going to be pronouns. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. It just seems to me so silly that a minister introduces himself and his pronouns, and then NPR uses that in the. I feel like you guys have just sunk to the depths of silliness now. Play the clip. See what he really introduced.
Pastor Charles McKenzie begins his sermon by introducing himself and his pronouns. He, him.
I like that
she qualified he, him.
Charles and said his pronouns. She clarifies.
He, him.
It's the most comical thing. I mean, look, I've said this before. I'll say it again. There's a whole wing of left-wing activism that is purely performative. It's just about saying the right things to feel good about yourself. You do the land acknowledgement. You put the pronouns in your bio. And it does not help anyone in any way, shape, or form. All it does is it makes you feel like a good person.
Yeah,
it is ultimately exploitative.
I don't have a strong opinion about this, but I have been predominantly convinced that it was good for the Washington football team to let go of that kind of derogatory name it had regarding Native American people. So they changed the name. I have not noticed any improvement in the lives of Native American people. I haven't noticed I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do or anything. I'm just saying that all this performance at a certain point, it's the pretense of change without actually fixing anything for anybody.
In 2020, Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation received $90 million in donations. And I would ask, what good is wrought by those? You know, in other words, I'm not like people who say there's racial oppression, everything else. I'm with you. My critique is not that. My critique is, are you doing anything to address the problem, or are you just showing how woke you are to the problems? And that makes you feel like you've succeeded because the real thing you were advocating for wasn't others, it was your own goodness.
Yeah.
And so you were, you know, widening your phylacteries to show what a holy and righteous person you are by affirming all the right creeds of your new religion.
Widening your phylacteries is a perfect reference. That's exactly what it is. It's a matter of widening your phylacteries.
And so that sort of thing, like wherever you fall, left, right, wherever you fall on even social issues, hopefully you can look at that and say, this is obnoxious and gross. This is people who are, in many cases, economically privileged, insulated from many of the problems they're reporting on, who assuage their own guilt by reminding themselves they're one of the good guys by having all the right mental opinions of it. Nobody's helped by that. And it just becomes this weirdly navel-gazing solipsism.
Yeah, virtue signaling with the yard signs, the love
in
is love.
House we
in this house we believe, yard signs. My son's, before they moved to their current location in Minneapolis, used to live near the University of St. Thomas and in St. Paul, Minnesota. And this was a neighborhood replete, abundant with those love is love signs. But honestly, I tell you, if an African-American family actually moved into this neighborhood in St. Paul, these people, you know, there'd be there would be a run on Depends at the CVS.
Wow. That's sure.
There does seem to be an inverse relationship between the presence of those signs and actual racial diversity
yes,
in a neighborhood.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, I live.
That's sad to think about. Yeah, I mean,
I live in a place where, like, if I go east, the racial demographics go one way. If I go west, they go a different way. And the wider the area, the more of the "in this house we believe" signs. And I don't see a whole lot.
Do you guys remember the movie "Guess Who's Coming to Dinner"? Where the way
which one, the original or the remake?
Oh, I didn't know they did a remake of it.
Sydney Poitier.
Apparently,
Sydney
it was terrible.
But it has that kind of feel of that. It is that movie's not quite a parody because it's more serious than a parody, but it has a mocking at its heart of mocking the kind of person who can say all the right things about racism, but really doesn't want anybody of a different race in their family,
right?
Or it's going to struggle like crazy with that.
If you want a great biting satire of that, Phil Oakes's song "Love Me, I'm a Liberal." He is a much more radical leftist, but he I'll quote you one verse from the song: "The people of old Mississippi should all hang their heads in shame. I can't understand how their minds work. What's the matter? Don't they watch Les Crane? But if you ask me to bust my children, I hope the cops take down your name. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal." And so it's all about like the kind of performative, I stand on the right side of everything, but don't ask me to actually be inconvenienced or do anything about this.
But I would like to say in the defense of the liberal, there are many people who are not like that.
True.
Like that does seem to be a problem that we have, but it's not the whole story. We shouldn't pretend
I'm critiquing a particular movement without meaning to universalize it. Just say when you see this kind of performative thing, the question you should be asking is, who benefits from this? Like, are you actually helping the downtrodden in any measurable way? Or is the point of this to tell us how amazing you are?
Yeah, and what makes a good life? Knowing all the proper terminology for every gender issue that has come up, or actually, you know, I don't know, going out and feeding the hungry or clothing the naked or something like that. I feel like the second problem with the performance of virtue is that we're missing the opportunity to actually be virtuous. Maybe part of the strategy is to excuse ourselves from going out and being virtuous. I don't know.
Okay, this is a 2020 report, so it might be slightly outdated. But you know the term Latinx?
Oh my gosh, I love that term so much. It's so,
yes, I love it because never it doesn't work in Spanish at all.
Latino.
Latinx?
Latinx. Yes. Latinx. Right. That is the best. That's the greatest invention ever. It's just the greatest. Yeah. It's just like the gift that keeps giving.
Pew Research. About 1 in 4 U.S. Hispanics have heard of Latinx, but just 3% use it. This is a term that liberal white people use to show how in touch they were to Hispanic and Latino sensitivities that Hispanics and Latinos do not overwhelmingly use for themselves. And even worse,
you know why? Because they have a word for it. Yes, it's Latino.
Turns out, if you speak Spanish, you're right.
What's wrong? Like, we're so in love with Spanish-speaking people that we've overcome the use of Spanish and we've now invented new words for them. Like we won't
we're
use
forcing them to change their language to show how much we love them.
Yeah, we love them so much we need to point out that their language is horrible.
I mean, overwhelmingly, American Indians prefer to be called American Indians or Indians, not Native Americans.
Or
Native
Americans, or Navajo, or Hopi.
I don't know. I've
Iroquois.
Asked a lot of them this question. I get very mixed answers when I ask them.
You see it in the numbers. And certainly American Indian activist groups don't use the term Native American because that's like Bureau of Indian Affairs, all this stuff. Like, we'll use Native American in official terminology. And so this is another external name kind of imposed. That is not the standard use. So it's one of these places, again, where people are doing a performative thing where it's all about saying the right words, but the right words as judged by other white liberals, not actually judged by the people being discussed.
In Canada, they say First Nations. And I actually think that's a good one because it is actually a description of Canada. They were the First Nations there.
Right.
Like that works for me. I asked a Navajo woman not long ago, and she said, she kind of shrugged, like, I really don't care. Like, that was her main thing. But she did say Indigenous Americans, I think. I can't remember now. I asked her, and now I can't remember the answer on the air. But I think she didn't say something that was in my lexicon. It was like, I think it would be good to say this. And I think it was Indigenous Americans.
But not Aboriginals.
Aboriginals out of favor.
Yeah, is it? And well, do they say it in Australia, Aboriginal?
Oh, yeah, in Australia,
yeah,
sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
They use a lot of words we wouldn't use in American English.
Oh, yes, they do.
Like half white, or no, what's it called? Flat white?
Flat white, white. Everybody drinks flat white over
there.
No,
I just drank one of those, yeah.
Yeah.
It's called a glass of milk.
It's
warm milk.
Well, we didn't get to witches. We were going to talk about witches, and we didn't get to napping. Let me just ask you this. Which would you have preferred to talk about if I had left enough time to get to witches or napping?
Tell me more about napping.
There's some science out about whether you should nap or not.
This science isn't new at all. Can I tell you a quick napping story?
I think it's bad science. I was going to argue against it. Yeah.
No, it's true. Around 2 o'clock, if you can take a short nap, it is good for you.
No, but the article I sent you said, but don't nap for too long because you mess up your whole.
That is true.
Brain.
Oh yeah, no, Rip Van Winkle.
That article is.
Rip Van Winkle is science. Now that's science. I get yes. Washington Irving, great scientist.
I knew a guy. He moved money around for a living, and he would take a nap. Every afternoon, this is what he would do. He would sit in a chair and hold a spoon over a plate on the floor so that as soon as he fell asleep, he would drop the spoon and the clank would wake him up. He said, you really only need to fall asleep for a couple seconds.
He sounds like a guy from a Dickens novel. Like, was he in a Dickens?
True
Were
story.
You reading a Dickens novel?
No, true
or was this
story.
A real true friend?
Story.
They're not Money your friends, around. You know. They're not your friends. Ebenezer Scrooge, he's not a real guy. He's not your friend.
That's absolutely true story. No, a little nap is good. But too long is bad.
This is what.
By the way, that's not new
this
science.
This is where I was going to go with the whole thing. The human body has certain rhythms and needs. Women's bodies different from men's bodies in that regard. One of the problems with modern society is we ride roughshod over those needs. We act like people don't have them, don't need them, and should get rid of them. So I think we should go back to the siesta. I think we need a little nap in the afternoon.
That Protestant work ethic to blame. I blame the Protestants.
Can I just compliment you two on tying together gender difference, Protestantism, siestas, even so we have the multicultural awareness, all of the themes of the last 2 hours brought together once with a nice little Charles Dickens, Washington Irving bow. That was well done, guys.
Oh, this is what the flannel panel does well.
This is why the flannel panel is the panel you need to listen to. If you're going to listen to a panel, make it flannel. That's our new, you know what? That's our new motto. I just came up with our new motto. That's Joe amazing. Heschmeyer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris Check, thank you very much.
Have a great Friday, Si.
Well, thank you, Chris. I think it's Wednesday. Is it Wednesday?
Have a great Thursday.
You don't know what day this is going to play. All right, that'll do it for us. Whatever day it is, we'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.